front, and want to thank D.R. Tucker for joining me in the first segment. He had to go back to his day job, but I'm very happy to bring back to the show someone who I interviewed about 5 years ago. 2007 it was, when his book Cool Creatures, Hot Planet came out, and it's just now hot off the press in Kindle version, available in not only this week, but it's actually available for a free download if you get it between today and December 23rd. So that might make a nice holiday gift for somebody. And Marty Essen, welcome to the program. This won the Green Front on the Progressive Radio Network.
Well, hi, Betsy. Great to talk with you again.
Yeah, and I'm glad you got a hold of me, because always great to bring back anyone talking about how people, especially in this country, can reconnect with Mother Nature, Mother Earth, and also to take a bit of a break from our usual focus, which is climate change in a very direct way. This is about sort of our greater environment, and there's many, many, many ecological issues, including preserving species, that are so important that we often don't get to. So really pleased to have you back on my show, even if it is a different show in a different place 5 years later.
Sure, why not?
So knowing you and your traveling habits, you probably have been around the world a few times in the last 5 years since we spoke.
Well, actually, the only place I've really been that was exotic since you and I spoke last is I went up to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which, you know, is such a critical area. And I ended up going on a canoe trip all the way across the Arctic Refuge to the Arctic Ocean and then out to Barter Island. And it was just incredible out there. And that was going to be my second book. But at the time I was doing that, it was during not this Republican convention, but the one before. And you had everybody chanting, drill, baby, drill. And I felt I couldn't wait for a book. So I ended up writing an elongated newspaper article that ended up being in newspapers all across the country, kind of showing what it's really like up there. And it was kind of amazing, because the Arctic Refuge, it's so pristine, and all the wildlife, and you can see forever. And then after we finished our adventure there, what we did is we got on an airplane, went back to Fairbanks, and then followed the Alaska pipeline up to Prudhoe Bay. And it's just, as a crow flies, it's only 120 miles from Prudhoe Bay to the Arctic Refuge. And you would always hear, and you still hear, the oil companies and the politicians saying, well, if you just allow us to drill in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, we'll be so small, we're going to have this little teeny footprint, you're barely going to know we're there. And, well, I went there and I took pictures of Prudhoe Bay, an area that puts out more air pollution than the entire city of Washington, D.C. And it was just one of the most disgusting compare and contrasts I've ever seen. And I didn't wait for a book. I needed to get that out right away. Even though I wasn't the first person to do it, I wanted to put it out myself. And so with the newspapers across the country, and I'm still showing the photos all over the United States. You can see them on my website. And it is just amazing how disgusting looking Prudhoe Bay is compared to the wilderness just 120 miles to the east.
And what is the source of that pollution?
Well, it's just all the oil rigs and all of the machinery up there drilling the oil. And then one of the things we did is we got on this tour that the oil companies did, because you can't go right into Prudhoe Bay. You have to be on a guided tour. But, you know, they're expecting people up there on these guided tours that are rah-rah oil companies. They're not expecting environmentalists like me. And so you go through the gates, through this bus, and then they take you right up to the ocean where you can swim in the Arctic Ocean. And we walked along, my wife and I, we walked along the beach there. And I couldn't actually say it was oil, but it was this gooey, disgusting substance that was all along. And it was like these people were getting in and jumping into the ocean. It's like, no way, we're not going to go in there. And so it was quite the experience to see that.
Mm. I didn't get a chance to ask my co-host, D.R. Tucker, who was just joining me for the first segment, what he thought of Chasing Ice. I don't know if you've seen that documentary yet. But,
it's on my list. I definitely want to see Chasing Ice, because, you know, that's a big part in my book, Cool Creatures, Hot Planet. It's also a big part of my show, Around the World in 90 Minutes, which is a show I do at colleges across the country, is, you know, one of the things that I try to do is I try to have fun with the environment and get people excited. We have exciting adventures. And then when people are having this great time, you know, I'll kind of slip in an environmental message. And the global warming, the ice, is definitely something that I do. And for instance, when I was up in Canada for the Canadian chapter in Cool Creatures Hot Planet. We stopped and we visited the Bear Glacier. And it's this powerful, huge, huge glacier. But there's one problem. There is a lake in front of that glacier that wasn't there 65 years ago. And it's a real powerful example that I use in my show to show the audience. And this is what global warming looks like. And it's much more extreme when you get to the far north or the far south.
So in your title, you say Cool Creatures, Hot Planet. I assume the hot does refer to climate change.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Did you see evidence of that everywhere you went on in exploring the seven continents?
Well, I wouldn't say everywhere because, you know, as you know, climate change you see a lot more extreme as you get way to the north. So we would see it a lot more as we went to the Arctic or when I went the opposite direction down to Antarctica. You could see it down there because even though you do have glaciers calving off, the rate they were calving off while we were down there was just astounding. It was just, you could always hear this rumble. And, you know, sometimes you would see it, and you'd be looking at this cliff of ice along the coast of Antarctica, and you'd hear the brrr, and then all of a sudden it would crash into the water.
You see a lot of that in Chasing Ice.
You
hear it and you see it.
So, yeah.
The time-lapse photography.
I'm eager to see that movie.
And so what did you learn, really, from your travels? And what message would you like to share with our listeners who may never get out to explore seven continents?
Well, you know, what did I learn? There was so much I learned, but it was an interesting, it was just incredible. Each area that I went to, I devoted a different chapter to a different continent. So I went to all seven continents, and there was always something that I didn't expect. Nature always had a surprise for me. An example down in Antarctica, we were watching these baby penguins around this pool, and what they would do is they would stick their head into this pool and they'd hold it for about 5 or 10 seconds and they'd come up and then they would joyfully run around the rookery and announce their accomplishment to the other penguins. Mm-hmm. And what they were doing is it was a penguin swimming lesson. You know, who knew penguins needed to learn how to swim? And so it was just, you know, such a heartwarming thing. And in fact, I have videos of this, of these penguins learning how to swim. And then, of course, the other side of it is just outside. You know, we were watching kind of what I called the beginning swimming lesson. And you go a little bit farther, and you have the advanced swimming lesson. And then a little bit farther, you had a leopard seal waiting for graduation dinner. And so you have nature there. You know, it's natural that a leopard seal is going to eat a penguin. But at the same time, it was a difficult thing to watch. You know, we became attached to these penguins and knowing, you know, that some of these penguins were just going to graduate and learn how to swim, and that was going to be the end of their life. But, you know, that's the way nature works.
Mm. And penguins and polar bears are the other one, the iconic animal that many people were focused on saving or are focused on saving, and yet it's also people being impacted by climate change, as we have been reporting regularly on this program, and is now, you know, getting out there to the greater public, connecting the dots between what's happening with a warming atmosphere and, you know, ocean temperatures and our increasingly extreme weather.
Mm-hmm.
So did you see polar bears?
Well, no, we didn't. We were prepared for it, and it's one of those things. Is when you're on foot in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and there are no defenses up there, and so you're number two, maybe number three or four on the food chain up there, and so it's one of those good. You really want to see a polar bear. On the other hand, well, maybe you don't want to see a polar bear. We did find polar bear tracks. And, in fact, I think I have a picture of it on my website where I've got this hand next to this polar bear track. And the hand looks just so small compared to this huge polar bear track. But, yeah, we were up there just after the polar bears had taken off out on the ice, so we missed them. But, yeah, it would have been great to see them.
What are some other great places to travel if you really want to get up close with animals and nature? I have some friends who have been on African safari. They just rave about it. What are some other places that might not be as obvious?
Well, one of my favorite adventures was backpacking in the rainforest of Borneo. And we backpacked. It was really an exciting trip. We were with members of a reformed headhunting tribe called the Aban. And we were only the third outsiders to hike in this area where they had taken us. And we got to see something very few people get to see. We got to see orangutans in the wild. And it was pretty amazing. Orangutans, there used to be, at one time, not too long ago, there were 30,000 orangutans in the wild. Their population has now crashed down to less than 15,000. And scientists are predicting if we don't do something, orangutans will go extinct in the wild in maybe the next 10 to 25 years. And one of the major reasons for this is palm oil plantations. As the local people are tearing down the rainforest to plant palm, to plant oil palm trees so they can make palm oil. And but where we were, we didn't see any of that because we were in a wilderness area. But it was incredible. First, we came across two females and a baby high in the trees. And I thought, you know, if I was ever fortunate enough to see an orangutan, and if it got upset, the worst thing it would do is throw feces at me. Well, these orangutans freaked out, and they started breaking out big tree branches and treetops and throwing them at us. And it sounded like the entire rainforest was coming down around us. But with this being a family unit, I didn't even attempt to take a picture. We quickly backed off and let those orangutans escape. Mm. But later on, we heard another orangutan off in the distance, and one of the Aban tribe made an orangutan call. And I figured, he'd never fool an animal as intelligent as an orangutan. And pretty soon, this huge male orangutan came in. And when he saw us and realized we had fooled him, he started throwing treetops at us. But after a few minutes, he settled down and he climbed down to this low tree branch. And he just stared at us. And we got to spend about 20 minutes of quality time staring basically face to face with this huge male orangutan. And it was just, it was, I just can't even explain what it was, what an experience it was to watch this magnificent animal. And
I wonder if that's, you know, where the term going apeshit comes from.
Well, you know, an orangutan means man of the forest in the Malay language. And it was like watching, you know, they are like, was it 99.7% of the genes that we share with them? So it's one of our very closest relatives. And it was almost like looking back into time, into his eyes. And, you know, they always say you're not supposed to look into the eyes of a primate. But in this case, you know, we felt perfectly safe. And we had an understanding, I think, with the orangutan. He was interested in us. We were interested in him. And it was just a breathtaking experience. And you know, one of the things that, you know, of course we hope is that we can preserve that, the rainforest there in Borneo and on the island of Sumatra where the orangutans live, and hopefully, you know, we can turn it around so they don't go extinct in the wild in the next 10 to 25 years.
Yeah, what is your takeaway message when you speak to live audiences? What do you really want to bring home?
Well, when I speak to live audiences and in my book, the whole idea is, yeah, let's have, I try to get my audience excited about nature. And, you know, if you ask me who is the most influential environmentalist of the last 20 years, my answer might surprise you. My answer would be Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter, because he has gotten so many people excited about wildlife that never would have been excited about it. And when you're excited about wildlife, you want to protect wildlife. And so that's what I do in my show, what I do in my book, is I get people excited, and then the natural instinct is you are going to want to protect them. You're going to, maybe with orangutans, you're going to be concerned about orangutans, and you're going to start watching your labels, and you are going to avoid foods that have palm oil in it. And you know, so I try to do things in a non-preaching way, because I think some people, when they're preached to, they just clam up, especially students, and I'm in colleges all the time, and I think college students, if you preach to them, they're clam up. But if you have fun and you get them excited, you know, I have so many students that come up to me after the shows and tell me how much I inspired them, and that they want to go into a field of science and they want to get involved. And so it's just my method of doing it is kind of following as close as I can in the big footsteps of Steve Irwin.
Hmm. Okay. And do you take to the water much? Have you explored the oceans?
You know, my wife is the water person. She is an expert scuba diver. I don't get along all that well with water. I do swim. Where I've taken to the water is, for instance, when we canoe down the Atchalik River across the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and I've done canoeing in the Amazon rainforest. But underwater is my wife's domain, not mine. But a real interesting experience was we went down to the we've been down to the Amazon twice, once for the Amazon chapter of my book, and then later on to finish up my book, we ended up down in the Amazon again. And the second time we went down to the Amazon, we went down during the rainy season. And we were actually able to canoe through the rainforest in places we had walked before. And it was just amazing the difference in the water between dry season and rainy season. In fact, where we were in the rainforest, where we had walked the time before, now we were canoeing in there, and I took my tall kayak paddle, and I could not touch ground. There was that big of a difference between the height of the water during the dry season and the rainy season.
Well, Marty, speaking of the Amazon, I want to plug your book, available on Amazon.com now. Actually, a free download between today and December 23rd. If you want to get someone, how would you do that? Is get someone a
holiday
gift?
You go to Amazon.com and you type in Marty Essen in the search in searches, MartyEssen, and it'll come up actually with the two versions of my book. It'll come up with the print version, which anybody's free to get. But right now, we just released the Kindle version, and the Kindle version just came out a couple weeks ago. In fact, I just checked this morning. It's now the number one wildlife book, and the number one animals book, and the number one travel essay book on Amazon.com in the Kindle format as of this morning. And so if you've got a Kindle, or if you can even download, you can go right on the Kindle page. If you've got a smartphone, or if you've got a tablet or a computer, there's free Kindle software you can download. So really anybody can download the book. And like I said, like you and I said, it's free through Friday, through Sunday, and then it's going to go back to its regular price, which is, I think, $6.99. So any way you look at it, it's a great deal.
Sounds great, Marty Essen. Thank you so much for joining us. I want to wish you a happy new year.
Same to you.
We'll get past the Mayan calendar on Friday. Hopefully there will be lots more to look forward to in terms of people who can get out there and travel and see animals up close and personal besides, their pet dog. So thanks in the meantime, for those of us who can't get out that much, bringing it to us.
Thank you so much for having me on, Betsy.
And, of course, the greater environmental message that all of nature is worth preserving, and there's a whole lot more all of we humans can do to make that happen.